Another thing that happened during Radiothon was a chat I had with a local writer, Dawn Malden. And I might have been suffering with the flu at the time, so a little bit scratchy. So forgive me. Here's a chat with Dawn. Unheard Voices is the memoir of local writer Dawn Malden, a teacher of English, literature and drama, and the firstborn child of deaf parents. Dawn, thank you for joining us on RTRFM.
Thank you, Dana.
Congratulations on publishing Unheard Voices.
Thank you.
I'm looking at a hard copy of the book. It describes Unheard Voices as finding language and belonging in the deaf and hearing worlds. And it has a beautiful photograph of a woman and a small child. Can you tell me about that image?
Yes, the woman is my mother, Evelyn, and the child is me, Dawn. And it's probably moved into 1945, probably about June, I'd say, by the look of it, I'm probably about 9 months old.
Mm.
And the photo came from a very, very tiny, tiny little snap that had been taken, and it was developed into the cover, and I was very, very pleased with the outcome.
It's beautiful. And before we talk about photographs and how important they are, tell me a little bit about your mum. Unheard Voices is a story in two parts, or it's many stories, but it's fundamentally, structurally in two parts. And tell me about your mum.
My mum was the fifth born child into a hearing family, and for 4 years she went undiagnosed. They didn't know what was wrong with her. They knew that something was wrong, and they probably, at that time, the language would have been retarded or, It was it was concerning for them, but she was also a very alert and quite a pretty little child. So for 4 years, and they were on a farm, and they were very, very busy as a fifth born child. So she wasn't diagnosed until she was 4 years old, and then I think the story sort of takes off from there, because that would mean separation from the family.
As it did for all deaf children at that time.
Yes, in 1910, my mother was born in 1917, so in 1910 a law was passed that all deaf children had to be educated at the deaf, not that they would have all been educated, I'm sure, and they might have just been tucked away on farms, is my understanding as well, mm-hmm. but they would all go to the Deaf and Dumb Institution in St Kilda Road, Paran, as it was called then. Didn't change until, I think, about 1948, the title.
It would have been a huge change to her young life at such a young age to be separated from family. What would that have been like?
As I was writing the book, Darnay, I really started to look at that idea of what it would be like for a child landing at that place with her father in the horse and buggy, and looking up at that great big building when she'd been used to a small farmhouse and lots of open space, and nobody could explain to her what was happening and what was going to happen next and why she was there. And I think that would have been just so challenging for a child, and that was one of the important parts of me writing the story, really.
And she was the fifth born child in that family, wasn't she?
She was, yes, she was. And in the book I tell the story of my grandmother always blamed herself for that child, and there's a story, she told me two stories, but I suspect that the story of why my mother was born deaf was because of German measles,
mm-hmm.
and 95% of children, I think that's the right figure, are born to hearing parents. And I asked my grandmother if she had German measles, and she said, I wouldn't know. She said, I was so busy milking cows and looking after other children and doing all of that, that I would never know. And I think it's probably the most likely outcome, because there was never any other children, and my mother had 5 hearing children, and we've all had children and grandchildren on from there, and none of those children have been born deaf, but my father was one of 3 deaf siblings.
Before we get to your father, I want to go back to that image on the cover, because I can see your mum, Evelyn, has her arms around you, and it might be a small stuffed toy. But I just noticed the physicality in that image and the stories of how language is tactile and physical for you.
She was a very tactile woman, and she was a very, very loving... Motherhood was very easy for her, especially babies. And she had these particular routines that she had with babies, and that was lots and lots of touching to go to sleep, soothing a baby's head. All of us, five children, all breastfed for 18 months. We never had dummies, we never had a bottle. So she was very tactile, and then we're always swaddled and popped out in the sunshine, attended to, and that was all without her ever hearing us, any of us.
And you learned sign language just as part of your very young life, didn't you?
Yes, sign language was my first language, and people I don't remember, of course, but I just can't ever remember not having an abundance of signs. And when you think about the signs, you know, just for sleep and bath and tired or whatever, they're so physical that I would imagine, and I feel confident in saying this, that I had a huge vocabulary before I was, you know, 1 year old, I would imagine, and they would have all been signs. Mm-hmm. So I would have been hearing things, but my whole world was very tactile, physical, and very visual as well.
So your language with your mother and your communication would have been abundant and delightful and physical. The communication between your mum and her mother, how did that transpire?
Well, that they never shared a language ever. You know, they wrote on pieces of paper, and she was very much loved by them. But they never shared a language because she went away to school, and then she gathered her language and her culture when she went to the deaf school, and lots of friends. But her mother, she always turned up for her. But because they didn't share a language, because any language, from my understanding, requires immersion, and Evelyn would only go home for 6 weeks at Christmas and maybe 2 weeks in the year, maybe not even that, and her mother couldn't get down to see her, so or her siblings, and then she lived in the city. And so gathering the language and having the time and the inclination and the immersion wasn't quite possible. I see that as the way that we do gather language.
Were they able to share photographs?
Photographs are a very important part of my storytelling, and they were a very important part of Evelyn's story and her mother, Joey. I see that as Joey's way of reaching Evelyn, because she gave Evelyn all the family photos, and they're very rich, not as many as we have today, but wonderful photos of family history. And Evelyn had all of those, and lovely portraits of her when she was four, when she was first diagnosed. And my mother kept those forever, and they were passed on to me, and they informed the story and helped my writing. So I see that as the language that Joey and Evelyn shared, and I see that as my research material.
27 to 10, it's Tuesday the 29th of August. You're on the record with Danae Gibson and Dawn Muldoon, talking about her memoir, Unheard Voices. We'll have some more from Dawn.
Something I found out from Marge Sandon's daughter was that the deaf were called by numbers, and that was something that I never knew about. And once I knew that, I went through some of my material that I had, and I found my mother and father's numbers, and then I asked a few other people, and then that made it sort of even sadder, I think. It made me very sad about it. So you want me to read?
Please do.
Chapter 28, Deaf Belonging. Boy 587 first crossed paths with girl 735 at the Victorian Deaf and Dumb Institution. When revisiting their school photograph in 1923, the future would have been impossible to predict. Angelic Evelyn, 6 years old, is seated in the front row, second from the left. Several rows behind, standing tall, is bespectacled teenager Arthur Edward Hatley. known as Evan Art in the deaf world, although she was always Evelyn to her family. He was the serious one and she was the sporty one. After they each left school at age 16, their deaf world was work, picnics, beach visits, parties, socials, sports, billiards, chess and the deaf club. Photographs of Eve show her with handsome men or as part of the various social groups of their world. Art was involved in different committees for deaf welfare, education and social events. Socialising was also a big part of his deaf connections. In those days, most people paired off by their late 20s or so, and at the ages of 33 and 25 respectively, so did Art and Eve. When I was growing up, my father was my guru on the language of life. My relentless pursuit of people and places comes from him. He wanted me to live in both the hearing and deaf worlds. As a native signer, I understood without being told how sign language used hand movements, sign order and body and facial cues to communicate. There was a grammar and syntax in the language that I spoke with my parents that had different patterns from that of the hearing world. Missing words did not change the meaning of what they wanted to say, but they could interrupt sense and flow for someone who had little experience of the structure of sign language. Still, the language of love had its own voice. There was a story I liked my father to tell me over and over again. EVE is what he would sign for this story. Never mother or mum. Tell me when you see mum at deaf club. Again, you know story. Me want know again. When Eve walk into deaf club, everyone stop to see what wearing. Her look beautiful, always wear different clothes. He would smile in the telling. Proud of her point of difference and his own for being clever enough to notice. Without saying so, we both agreed that he had married the most attractive woman at the deaf club and the one who happened to be my pretty mother. I never asked my mother what she thought of my father, a man of many contradictions and passions. I assumed she would agree with me that he was something better than handsome, an interesting-looking man who people thought was also clever. And that was what he wanted them to think, too, that he was a clever man, despite his deafness. My parents were probably surprised to be married to each other. Eve was attractive, lively and fun and kind, and everyone loved her. While Art was intense, an observer of the world around him, and also a bit of a snob about what he knew, Eve was a catch. Family and friends knew it, and fortunately, so did Art. Their world was a balancing act of differences, love, language and belonging.
Thanks, Dawn. That's lovely. Tell me about your favourite books as a child.
Well, as I was, you know, probably about 10 or 11, I didn't really have time for... I did like books, but I was out and about looking for my own stories, so mm-hmm. I wasn't sort of immersed in books. But I loved things like books like Anne of Green Gables and pony stories and Famous Five and all of those sorts of stories. It was more in my 20s that I became, and when I went back to education in my mid-20s, that I became an avid reader, really. But I loved adventure stories, but I was pretty busy outside in the outside world. We didn't have a radio in our house until I was 11 years old, so I was always looking for some sort of story and how the outside world was different to my own.
Mm. What are you reading now?
At the moment, I'm reading The Memoir and the Memoirist by Thomas Larson, and... absolutely loving it because it takes memoir writing, working with your own truths and developing the idea of a voice and an authentic voice to another level. Yes, I'm enjoying it very much because I'm working on another book. Just that importance of getting the voice of the story, the tone of the story, and trying to be as authentic and as engaging for the reader too. That's very important for me.
Does the final book in your hands look like you thought it might when you started?
No, it does not. No, I had a particular idea of featuring Eve as a child, I think. I found a photograph of her only probably about 18 months ago when she was about 3 on the farm, and it was when nobody knew what was wrong with her, and there's that sort of sense of isolation. I always wanted to use that. For a while, I think I felt sort of surprised because I'd had this other image in my mind of it really focusing on Eve and not so much on me. But every day I feel more and more attached to this cover because I think it features my mother with all her gentleness and her tenderness and her sense of joy, and that she was a woman at a particular time in 1944. My maternal family were very anxious about her having a child and certainly her having a deaf child. So, and for her, mothering was her first language, really.
Well, thank you so much for chatting with us today, Dawn. Congratulations on the publication of Unheard Voices. And I look forward to chatting with you for your next.
Thank you, Dana. Thanks for your time.
That was Dawn Malden chatting about her memoir, Unheard Voices, published by Fremantle Press.